You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Moving on, let's talk about the city of Lafayette, Colorado. On July 27th, a cyber attack via ransomware, basically it was a ransomware attack, on the city's computer system occurred. It disrupted phone service, email, and online payment and reservation systems for the city. Financial data did appear to be recoverable due to unaffected backups, but they are also saying that personal credit card information was not compromised. So heads up, City of Lafayette citizens and employees. Moving on, let's talk about a platform, a creative project management software platform called InMotion Now. Now, researchers from VPN Mentor uncovered an unsecured AWS S3 bucket, basically like a database in the cloud with over 5.5 million files and more than 343 gigabytes in size. And they eventually were able to tie it back to InMotion Now. And the company's data that the researchers found were cybersecurity training firm or cybersecurity firm ISC2 had multiple data included in this breach. The insurance company Brotherhood Mutual, multiple universities like Kent State in Ohio, and Purdue in Indiana, Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino, a consumer electronics company, ZAGG, Z-A-G-G, a nonprofit organization, the Freedom Forum Institute, Myriad Genetics, Performance Health, and on and on. And so we're going to see where this goes, but like the Blackbaud update that I gave you earlier, we may see more companies have to declare data breaches. And since they were all using this platform like Blackbaud, they all had the same type of data exposed to various degrees. So we're talking about things like analytic reports or internal presentations, which included things like company strategy, annual revenue amounts, current customer counts. They also had training materials done, expose internal client requests, which included things like requester name, project name, and details. They had marketing collateral strategies, and various collateral exposed, product labels, business intelligence, mailing lists with relevant personally identifiable information, and university donor lists, including things like full names, personal and work emails of the donors, direct phone numbers, credentials, such as degree, school, and year, and the amount donated. That is obviously going to be huge. I don't think it's going to be as big as Blackbaud, but I will keep you up to date as more companies now have to declare data breaches thanks to the supply chain hit. Moving on, let's talk about Piedmont Orthopedics and another firm called Ortho Atlanta, both out of Atlanta, and threat actors called Paiza or M. Espinoza, no relation, I hope, to me whatsoever, have already dumped more than 3.5 gigabytes of data. Much of this information about rentals is about rentals and business aspects, but as the researchers were going through the files, a number of highly detailed medical records on patients appear to have been exposed as well, which includes things like names, dates of birth, address, contact information, diagnosis information, surgical details, laboratory tests, cardiograms, and insurance information, not to mention pages of protected health information as well. The files may have been exfiltrated on July 11th, looking at the timestamps in the dark web. And so that's obviously a huge problem. So if you use Piedmont Orthopedics or Ortho Atlanta, heads up to you. Moving on to Michigan State University, they disclosed on August 10th that attackers were able to steal credit card and personal information from roughly 2,600 users of its shop.msu.edu online store. MageCart is claiming responsibility, so heads up if you've shopped at Michigan State University's online store. Moving on, let's talk about the SANS Institute, that's S-A-N-S. They're a major player in cybersecurity training. They just suffered a data breach with 28,000 user records containing personally identifiable information. Apparently on August 6th, during a review of their email configuration and rules, they discovered a security breach. And what had happened was a rule had been set up to forward emails to an unknown account. And so basically, if, like, let's say I'm hacked and you're sending me an email, I'm getting your email, but somebody else, God knows where, is getting a copy of that email that you're sending me. And that rule apparently was only active for a single account on SANS, but here we are. And hopefully SANS Institute will have cleaned that up. Moving on, let's talk about Flintshire Council out of the UK. Personal information basically of people who left comments about a local planning issue on their website, apparently was hit. A summary of their comments had been made visible, but their personal details were redacted. However, according to the council, and I quote, a conscious effort has been made to remove that protection by somebody accessing our website. You know, obviously, that's a huge issue, but apparently somebody was not happy with whatever the planning issues were. So heads up, if you have talked about local planning issues on the website for the Flintshire Council in the UK. Moving on, let's talk about one of the United States' largest medical debt collection companies, which is R1RCM. They are formerly known as Accretive Health Incorporated, and they are based out of Chicago. They just got hit with the ransomware attack, and they acknowledged taking down their systems in response to this, but otherwise declined to comment for Brian Krebs of Krebs on Security, who broke this story recently. And so obviously this company, RCM, has a massive amount of personal information, financial, medical, basically tens of millions of patients, because they're a debt collector for healthcare. So this includes names, dates of birth, social security numbers, billing information, medical diagnostic data, et cetera, et cetera. That's obviously a very huge issue. RCM is declining to disclose how, what, when, where, why regarding this, other than the fact that obviously they have been hit, as Brian Krebs broke. Moving on. Let's talk about Brown-Forman. This is one of the largest companies in the United States that is in the alcohol business. They got hit with a cyber attack, and the attackers copied out roughly 1 terabyte of confidential data from them, and they plan basically to sell that to the highest bidder. Now, the ransomware gang that took credit for this is called Reval, and in a post to one of their leak websites, Reval published multiple screenshots with directory trees, files, and names that appear to support their claims, and internal conversations between some employees, and basically the pictures that they posted show documents dating back as far back as 2009, so that's a huge issue. And obviously, I'm going to say this here, and I'm going to say this right now, do not mess with the alcohol supply in the United States while we're going through a pandemic. That is a huge, huge thing. And there is no rock you will be able to hide under that our population won't find you and probably murder you for. So that's a huge, huge thing, you know, obviously for a lot of people. And so we'll see what happens with Brown-Forman. Hopefully they will get that taken care of. And finally, I want to talk about one more thing, which is by virtue of the looting and rioting that we have seen due to the civil unrest, and please understand, I am making a differentiator between protesting peacefully and looting and rioting, but as a result of the looting and rioting, that is actually causing widespread healthcare HIPAA data breaches. Both CVS and Walgreens have had to declare HIPAA breaches as a result. And here's what's going on, and let's start with Walgreens. A Walgreens spokeswoman told Information Security Media Group, who reported on this, that essentially they had to file a report with the Department of Health and Human Services to reflect break-in incidents that occurred in late May and early June of approximately 180 locations nationwide by virtue of these riots and protests. Excuse me, looting and riots, not the protests. The HHS Office for Civil Rights HIPAA breach reporting tool website shows that Walgreens on July 24th reported thefts involving paper documents and portable electronic devices affecting more than 72,000 individuals, excuse me, that use Walgreens. The devices were things like computer hard drives, and so that's obviously an issue. If somebody is stealing, let's say, a hard drive out of a Walgreens that they're using in their pharmacy, then it's going to have patient information on it, possibly. So that's a huge, huge problem, and so they've had to declare. CVS, moving to them, has also had to declare, and in a July 28 statement, CVS said that between May 27th and June 8th, stores in several markets were vandalized, and as a result, on July 24th, CVS reported to the HHS a breach impacting 21,300 individuals involving basically a loss of their documents. And to quote CVS, after conducting a thorough review of impacted stores, we discovered on July 8th that, as a result of vandalism, certain patient information was missing or destroyed. The missing or destroyed patient information was included on hard copy paper prescriptions, filled prescriptions held in the pharmacy waiting bins, or vaccine consent forms, depending on the store location. Obviously, when we are looking at this, we are looking at protected health information that includes things like names, dates of birth, addresses, medication names, prescriber information, primary care providers, phone numbers, and medical information. That goes for both CVS and Walgreens. That is a huge, huge problem that we have here, because a physical breach is absolutely a compliant breach. And so if you use CVS or Walgreens in an area that has been affected by the looting and the rioting, heads up to you. You may have been involved in one of these two data breaches, and hopefully they should be reaching out to you as required by HIPAA compliance. So those were your breaches of the last 2 weeks. Wow, this is probably the longest segment I'm doing this week, but you know, it's just insane. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And for this week's deep dive, we're actually talking about government overreach, not just the U.S. government, but all governments worldwide. And so I'm asking the question that we're going to dive into here is, when a government overreaches, do tech companies have an obligation to fight privacy violations on your behalf? Now, first, we need to talk about the new law that the Chinese government has imposed on Hong Kong, which is where basically we are going with this. But I think philosophically, it goes for absolutely everything. Now, Hong Kong basically is both a city and an area that has traditionally been outside of Chinese communist rule, thanks to its annexation over a century ago by the British. Since they were unified with China 20 years ago, the Beijing government has been slowly moving to take more and more control over Hong Kong and bring them in line with the rest of the country, mainland China. This basically is the cause of all of the protests in the past year or so that you've been seeing, as Hong Kong residents are seeking to keep themselves basically out from under this level of authoritarian control. And if you are a regular listener of mine, you know that I talk about these things. I think it was two shows ago where I was talking about basically the Chinese surveillance state and their authoritarianism and all of this. So that's obviously a very, very serious problem, because here we are on July 1st of this year, where China is ramping up control by enabling new laws. And so that's where we're going to start here. Now, this new law that China basically imposed on Hong Kong was drafted almost entirely in secret via closed door meetings in Beijing that even the Hong Kong leader, the current leader, Carrie Lam, was not a part of. Even hours after its reported passage by Chinese National People's Congress on July 1st, all but a tiny handful of Hong Kong residents actually had no idea that this law was there or what it contained. Only a handful of people knew about this. Basically, all of Hong Kong had no idea. Now, by bypassing local Hong Kong legislature, China was able to create this law. Now, this law criminalizes, and I quote, acts of secession, subversion, and state power, terrorist activities, and collusion with foreign or external forces to endanger national security. Essentially, right to a trial by jury can be suspended in certain circumstances, cases can be heard in secret, and foreign residents in Hong Kong, meaning, let's say, you're from the United States and you have been a longtime resident of Hong Kong, can be expelled if they are suspected of violating this new law, regardless of whether they are convicted or not. The national security law also trumps any existing Hong Kong laws if there is a conflict of interest between a Hong Kong law, let's say for privacy and security, versus this one. So basically, the Chinese government comes in and says, we are the final arbiter of law. While officials had earlier suggested penalties under the law would be softer than they are in China, meaning Beijing was trying to soft pedal those who knew about this by saying, oh, well, this is going to be much less harsh than what we do in mainland China. The maximum sentence given for each of the four main crimes, secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces, is now life imprisonment. The law also extends Beijing's direct control over the city, establishing a new committee for national security that will include a Beijing-appointed advisor and an, and I quote, office for safeguarding national security that directly is under the Beijing government, which has broad powers to prosecute Hong Kongers deemed of committing particularly egregious offenses. So Hong Kong and Beijing officials are now arguing, basically with the media, and they're arguing to the public that this law is necessary and overdue, and promise that it will only affect a tiny minority of Hong Kongers while returning, and I quote, stability and prosperity to the city. Essentially, the Chinese government is hoping that this law is going to quash the protests and everything else that we've been seeing go on there for about a year now. And so by virtue of this, we are seeing arrests that have been happening since July 1st, since this law has gone into effect. Now, here's a current issue that we're talking about here, which is big tech and their massive data collection policies for essentially everybody worldwide. Now, much of America's big tech industry, like Apple and Google, have been very quick to placate the Beijing government to help ensure that they can continue to provide their products in mainland China, the most populous country and largest internet-using population on Earth, but not just the citizenry, but also its internet users, because it's been very lucrative for them to do so. And so by virtue of that, they have been kowtowing to the Beijing government. But something just happened with this that many did not see coming. Google, Facebook, and Twitter are actually pausing their processing of data requests from the Hong Kong government as they review this new security law. And quite frankly, I didn't see this one coming either. And so, to quote a Google spokesperson, when the law took effect, we paused production on any new data requests from Hong Kong authorities and will continue to review the details of the new law. Twitter also halted its handling of government requests as of July 1st, and Facebook announced their pause on Monday, July 6th, always behind Facebook when it comes to other governments. Now, according to Facebook's spokesperson that basically was talking to the publication The Verge, they said, and I quote, we believe freedom of expression is a fundamental human right and support the right of people to express themselves without fear for their safety or other repercussions. Twitter said that it's reviewing the new law to assess the implications, adding many terms of the new law are, and I quote, vague and without clear definition. And that is, again, a spokesperson writing The Verge. And to quote Twitter again, like many public interest organizations, civil society leaders, and entities and industry peers, we have grave concerns regarding both the developing process and the full intention of this law. Social media platforms typically produce private user information in response to valid court orders, depending on the legal process in various countries. So, for example, here in the United States, Facebook, Twitter, etc., tend to disclose to say, we have basically received 1,000 subpoenas this year for information on social media. Now, this could be local law enforcement in your town going after somebody that might have posted incriminating evidence on social media, but they have their social media account set to private, or it could be something else. But under the new position that basically Hong Kong faces, all of these companies will at least temporarily ignore the requests coming from the government of Hong Kong. Now, basically, Google, or rather aspects of Google and all of Facebook and Twitter, have basically already been banned in China for several years. You know, I've mentioned this before. We're talking about the Great Firewall here, which essentially stops the use of traditional Google.com, which all of us here in the United States get to. Same with Facebook, because they have their own social media. Same with Twitter, etc. This is under the Great Firewall. And so the government basically has a whole bunch of sensors and monitors to track online activity. Basically, if you're in mainland China, You probably don't have a Facebook account because Facebook is deemed illegal by the Chinese government. So by virtue of this, I think we have essentially two scenarios that are going to play out as I see this. The companies will either start honoring the requests for information, knowing full well they could be sending dissidents in Hong Kong to a life sentence in the hope of keeping some kind of relationship with China. So, for example, Facebook, which is banned in China, uses Chinese manufacturers for its Oculus VR headsets, its Facebook portal, and all of that. And Mark Zuckerberg personally has been trying to make inroads into China in different ways for years. Twitter basically is the only one that has no real ties to China in this equation, for the record. And that is absolutely true. I mean, I have also done deep dives on Google as well as news items on Google, both on my daily podcast and video, as well as this radio show, about things like Project Dragonfly, where Google has been creating essentially a monitored and authoritarian search engine for the Chinese government that China was looking at requiring their users to use when searching for data. So in other words, if I'm a Chinese citizen in mainland China and I am searching for free Tibet, for example, on Google, thanks to Project Dragonfly, the Chinese government is going to know exactly that it was me searching for that specific thing. And then obviously that could go towards things like the social credit system that they've got, you know, and other penalties. So that's obviously a very, very serious situation. Twitter, being the smallest of this platform with hundreds of millions of users, not billions of users like Google and Facebook, really has no interest or presence in China, you know, that I know of or that I could find. And that is the first scenario, is basically that these companies might prioritize money over life, saying, well, we can potentially lose billions of dollars by not being in China. So what's a life sentence for a few dissidents versus the money that we're making and the people we're employing? Now, the second scenario that might play out here is that they will deny or ignore these requests, basically, and that will help perpetuate the bifurcation of the internet that I wrote about in 2018 for Forbes. Now, if you didn't read that article, and I'm not expecting many of you to, I wrote in 2018 what the internet's going to look like in 2028, because we are heading towards a bifurcation. Thanks to China's Belt and Road Initiative, they are making inroads into something like 60 or 70 different countries. I can't remember the exact total off the top of my head, where they are not just bringing infrastructure like road and schools and hospitals, they are actually bringing censored and authoritarian internet. And they are teaching authoritarian governments, the example I used in the article was Vietnam, on how to actually run a censored internet. And so in 2028, we're going to have, in parts of the world, a very heavily censored, monitored, and authoritarian internet. And in the rest of the world, it's going to be a lot more free, a lot more open, what we have in the United States and Europe, etc. And that's where we are heading. And Google has been trying to play both sides of the fence. So the ramification is that basically, China will say, okay, we're going to cut off Google, we're going to cut off all of these companies, we're going to do it ourselves, create our own search engines, etc., which means a good chunk of the world is not going to get Google. And Google has been trying to play both sides of the fence, which is one of the premises of that article. And so all of that, those two ways that I think this could go, brings us back to the question that I started with. When a government overreaches, do tech companies have an obligation to fight privacy violations like this? Another way to put it would be, what obligation do offerers of free platforms have to their users? Now, no company wants to be in violation of the laws of countries that they do business with, but at some point a situation can be created where it's less about the profit motive and more about the ethics and morality of the company. Basically, that's the question that I have for my first point here. Is Facebook, and I think I know the answer to that, is Facebook willing to, let's say, sacrifice ethics and morality to allow dissidents to go to jail because they know they could make billions of dollars? Same for Google and Twitter. So I have no doubt, or rather I should say while I have no doubt, that there are many people out there who support the Beijing government and what they do, there are many people out there, primarily outside of China, that do not. You know, I personally enjoy my right to peacefully protest my government here in the United States when I disagree with it without having to basically fear life imprisonment. If I am peacefully protesting, and we have seen a ton of protests, you know, and obviously I am not equating protests, let's say, over George Floyd and all of that with the looting and the rioting that we've seen both here in Chicago and other places. But if I am peacefully protesting my government, I have a legal right to do that, and they're not going to throw me in jail for life. I'm really not, if I'm nonviolent. And I think that is a huge, huge thing, because it helps to keep the government in check by ensuring that we can create peaceful change via an open election or another process that allows a government to change and adapt to, let's say, a problem that they have, or an issue that they have, or an error that they have. But should I then have the expectation of a Facebook or a Google or a Twitter to honor my right to privacy when they've been data mining the bejesus out of me and working hand in hand with my government? Because we all know that they have been very heavily in bed with the US government. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't know. Edward Snowden, for example, in 2013, 2014, revealed, the PRISM project, that the NSA was basically going into the Googles and Facebooks of the world and able to get our data at will, outside of a warrant and all of that, because they were doing it for anti-terrorist reasons or whatever the methodology was. So then the question becomes, do I, have that expectation if I'm coordinating my protest efforts using that platform then as well? And so that's obviously a very serious issue, because you can have, let's say, dissidents in a foreign country that go to the dark web to try to remain anonymous from their government to coordinate anti-government activities. But some groups are going to be using Facebook or Google or Twitter because they don't know how to get to the dark web or use that technology. And now you've got, let's say, an authoritarian government going to Google and saying, give me everything on all of these people so they can start making the links and essentially create a conspiracy where perhaps a conspiracy does or does not exist, and then arrest people and put them in prison, apparently for life. I think these are important questions that we need to ask. And if the answer is no, we don't have that right on a free platform, then what happens in a country where the penalty is life in prison? And so I think that's a very serious issue, because if, for example, Google says, okay, Chinese government, we will give you everything on the Hong Kong protesters, once that dust settles, if I'm the next generation of Hong Kong protester, I've lost probably one of my major avenues, with which to hide myself while I am, let's say, creating not necessarily, destructive things like terrorist bombings or something, but perhaps I'm coordinating with other dissidents around the globe on ways to, let's say, peacefully protest my government, or protest my government in ways that does no harm to anybody, but may be considered illegal under that law simply by virtue of me saying words.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at NickAESP. Again, that's NickAESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.